Hello, lacrosse friends. Welcome once again to Box LaBeat on NLL Radio, also available on iTunes through Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I am Stephen Stamp, your host and an editor at ilindoor.com, where you can find the best of lacrosse coverage on the internet. Also go to insidelacrosse.com for more of the field side of the game, also some box there. This week, the first week of playoffs is in the books. A couple of exciting games. Rochester getting out ahead early, then holding on to beat New England. And the next night, Calgary getting well behind and then coming back with a huge, stirring comeback to beat the Colorado Mammoth and move on to the division championships being held this weekend. I will speak to one member from each of the teams in the division finals. First, we will start with the Saturday game, and I speak to transition player Brad Gillies of the Rochester Nighthawks, who had a hat trick and an assist, a huge game for him in his first playoff game as Rochester down New England. They will be facing the Georgia Swarm on Saturday, and I speak to Jordan Hall. His return, along with the returns of Joel White and Chad Tutton, huge elements in the turnaround of the Swarm season that saw them win their last six games and eight of their last 10. They will be playing for their second straight trip to the National Lacrosse League Cup Championship. Of course, it was called the Champions Cup when they won it last year. It is now the NLL Cup. They want to win in either case. On Sunday, we will see the Saskatchewan Rush, the division champions out west and the first overall place team, take on the Calgary Roughnecks. I speak to Adrian Soricchetti of the Rush about how they dealt with their week off in between the season ending and the division finals, and how the Rush are preparing for this game. And then Dane Doby with the huge six goals and three assists. Massive night for Doby. He was a key contributor to that big comeback win for the Roughnecks that got them to this division final. Should be two exciting games, and they're definitely excellent guests, all four of them. Brad Gillies, Jordan Hall, Adrian Soricchetti, and Dane Doby. My thanks to all four for being here. And to you, lacrosse friends, I hope you enjoy this episode of Box LaBeat on NLL Radio. Joining me on Box LaBeat from the Rochester Nighthawks, fresh off a win against New England and preparing to face the Georgia Swarm in the East Division Final, Brad Gillies. Welcome to the show. Obviously, an exciting win for you guys over the weekend after it had been a few years for the franchise, and for a lot of you, this was the first time ever playing in an NLL playoff game. What was the feeling like going into the game, and how did you feel like you guys responded to the challenge?
Our first goal of the year was to make playoffs, so it felt really good to complete that first goal, and yeah, like you said, since my draft class, we hadn't made the playoffs the past two seasons, so it's definitely something that was good to get the monkey off the back there to get into the playoffs. And you know, once you get in there, anything can happen. And we're a confident group right now, so we knew if we just got in there, we'd hopefully be able to make some noise.
I want to talk about, you had a huge night, your first National Lacrosse League hat trick, included the empty netter at the end, but I want to talk about the second goal because it was a critical goal. You guys were leading 12-10 at the time, but New England had some momentum. They'd scored five of the last six goals, and you're out there, you're slipping up a little bit to the top of the formation. There's a pass across the top, and it looked like you saw it coming. You just extended full reach with the stick in just your left hand and got it clean and took off. Did you see the pass coming? Did you sense what was coming, or were you just kind of, did you just all of a sudden you see the ball on its way?
No, I can kind of tell. I saw O'Connor kind of coming around the top there, so I knew that could be a swing pass coming there, so I just kind of read that a bit, and I knew I got a pretty long reach, and if I timed it well in that ball, if he kind of forced it, I'd be able to pick that off, and I was lucky enough to be able to do that, and then to be able to get that in full speed, allowed me to break away from O'Connor trying to catch me there, and I was lucky enough to break away a bit, get some separation, and then bury it.
When you got that one, did you... And when you get back to the bench, did the guys seem to sense what a big goal that was? With, I mean, like I said, all the momentum going New England's way. You guys had had your way early on, but you know how good they are, having had them beat you three times this year. And it really felt like they were creeping back into that game and had a chance. And then all of a sudden, that goal just seemed to be a huge momentum turner.
Yeah, you could kind of sense that, and you felt them coming back a little bit, but at that point, get a three-goal lead there with just under 10 minutes left, I think we're pretty confident in our D that we should be able to shut them down for 10 minutes with a three-goal lead. So, yeah, it was definitely a good feeling of getting that goal and kind of shifting the momentum. You definitely got a sense that that was a pretty big goal, so I was happy I was able to do that.
When you're taking off like that, and like you said, Riley O'Connor's chasing you down, you're staring down Aaron Bold, you're running full speed, trying to make sure you get the shot off in a spot that you want while avoiding the crease. And, I mean, there's a lot of factors that come into play. How much time do you have to think? Obviously, there's a lot of instinct and reaction, but what's the thought process as that's happening?
It's pretty much all instinct. I feel like when I'm running off the floor there, I'm just thinking run fast right there. I'm not really thinking about the shot yet. And then just once you get to that right spot, you just kind of, your instincts pretty much take over. You just kind of find a little bit of net, get them moving a little bit, and then say a quick little prayer, I guess, almost, and hope it goes. But, yeah, it's not a lot of thinking. You just let your practice kind of take over and hope for the best.
From that point on, you guys, you get another goal just over a minute later from Corey Vittorelli. And from there on, you just kind of held on till the end. There was an empty net goal. You scored the empty net goal just under 3 minutes to go. Maybe a little earlier than usual to pull the goaltender when they brought Aaron Bold out, but not a huge risk given that they're already down by a couple of goals. And if they don't pull the goalie then and don't score, they've only got a couple of shifts left where they can pull him and get the chance. Were you at all surprised that he came out when he did?
No, I'm not surprised. I think them knowing our defense, we're a pretty strong group, that it's not going to be easy to be able to get the three or four goals that you need tied up with that time left. So that extra attacker is going to be big and to get you that better look. And I think no matter who you're playing, you probably try to get that odd man situation just because you know how good defenses are right now. And every 30 seconds, that's another possession gone by, another minute off the clock. So every possession so huge there. So no, we weren't that surprised to see their goalie pulled.
You guys have been putting this defense together for the last couple of years. It's always such a fine line of, I mean, it was such a good defense when the team was winning championships. And then there were a lot of guys of a similar age getting a little bit further in their careers. And it seemed like the defense got not old all of a sudden, but older. And you needed that injection. You get guys like Graham Hossack and yourself. And then, of course, this year you bring in Jake Withers. But you've also, been working with some of the veterans like Paul Dawson and Ian Lord and Sid Smith, of course, and Scott Campbell. I mean, all these veterans, but the young guys coming in, there's been quite a bit of change. And then you come into the playoffs and you've got, with Lord a little banged up and a couple of injuries here and there, you've got Eric Schuhl in, who I think has been really good for you, but hasn't played a ton. You've got Adam Peroni in, same situation where he hasn't played a lot, but has been around practices. And you've got Frank Brown, who came over partway through the year. So that's three of your 10 defenders are guys who are fairly new to the group. So as much as the unit's been coming together, there must have been a bit of work at trying to integrate everyone and feel comfortable at this point in the season.
Yeah, that's just a testament to the hard work those three guys have been putting in all year with us. And then our coaching staff as well, they do a great job of inputting our system every day in practice and just really hone in on that. And so we can just kind of sub guys in and trust each other out there that they're going to know the system and they're going to do a job for us. And so it was very impressive that those guys were able to step in. Peroni's second game, it's a playoff game. And those other guys, first handful of games, and it's a big game like that. So it's a testament to the hard work they've been doing and just the work and practice we've had all year, that we can put those guys in and still be confident as a group. And he also, the group's so strong, but the biggest thing that we have is a guy named Matt Vince there that he saves our butts a ton when we do make a little bit of mistakes. And so our group is playing really, really strong, but it starts with him. He's unbelievable still, and you kind of take it for granted. I think the rest of the league maybe takes it for granted a little bit because he's been doing it for so long, but we definitely don't. We know he's a big reason for those low numbers that we put up.
It was interesting early in the season. There was a story that somebody put out saying, Matt Vince is back, and his response was, I didn't realize I'd gone anywhere. But, of course, he won 4 Goalie of the Years in 5 years, whatever, had a great stretch, and then had a couple of seasons that were – he was still good but wasn't quite at the level. And it's always a chicken and egg thing where the defense was going through some changes, some adjustments, and he was getting to be an older goaltender. But he looked – I thought this year he looked about as good as ever and really comfortable with you guys. And a big part of it, I'm sure, is he really likes to interact with you guys as defenders throughout the course of a game. We all see it, that he's he's letting you know what he thinks and how to adjust to things.
Yeah, that's for sure. No, yeah, he sees a lot out there. He's really good about communicating. And but yeah, I agree with that. Though I don't think he ever left. I think I saw the numbers last year. I think we even put up two more goals against this year than we did last year. So, or they're the same amount. So he was phenomenal last year too. And so for people to say that he's back, I think that's very misleading. That he hasn't gone anywhere. He's just played at this elite level for so long that, like I said, you take it for granted a little bit, or you think that he's gone or something like that. But he's just been doing it. And he's just such a hard worker. You can't say enough good things. And how much film he watches and everything. He's a true pro, and we're lucky to have him.
For you personally, working with the team, so you're living in Rochester, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so there's a few of you down there. What's it like on a weekly basis while you're working there during the week? I mean, obviously you get a chance to get together and do some practice on your own, plus the team practices, but how are you enjoying the work as part of the Nighthawks organization?
It's awesome. We get to get out in the community a ton, which I think is just huge to make sure that people know that we want to be a big part of this Rochester community. So we get out to myself, Jake Withers, and Austin Shanks right here, and we get out to youth practices a ton. We go to schools and do some assemblies on a couple different presentations and some Lax 101 stuff, type stuff, and then we're also just trying to build the youth lacrosse, box lacrosse in Rochester as well. That's kind of my biggest role, is building like the Junior Nighthawks program and things like that. And so I take a lot of pride in that and trying to be one of the founding parts of box lacrosse in Rochester, because as you know, the whole American landscape is the box lacrosse world is growing here a ton with the organization like US Boxba and things like that. So I'm trying to really, really build that and be a part of that. And the Americans are realizing how great box is for your lacrosse game. And we sell it as that cross-training type thing that it's going to just do wonders for your field lacrosse game. So it's a pretty cool thing to be able to try to grow that here, and then as well as doing all that other community outreach stuff too. So it's a pretty good gig I got here.
You mentioned you've got Austin Shanks and Jake Withers working with you there. They are two of the three first-round rookies, along with Eric Fennell, all of whom have had really terrific seasons, made big contributions. I'll put you on the spot a little bit and ask you to pick the top rookie among them this year. If I was going to be voting for the league rookie of the year, what order should I put them in? Do you have one of them with you in the car there?
I don't know. If you got no, none of them are here right now. I'm just with them at the gym. But so I don't know. I think if you look at the whole body of work over the whole course of the year, yeah, I think I'd have to go Jake Withers, just because he's been doing it since day one, and he's come in and he's dominated the position, and been the best in the entire league at a position, as well as being a great D guy and pretty good in transition as well. I know he hates being just considered a face-off guy because. Yeah. He's so good in his defensive end, and he's even even put up six, seven goals too in transition. So he's just an all-around good player, but he's also dominated the faceoff dot. But it's tough to change his right there. And I think especially second half of the year, if you're talking about second half rookie of the year, I think I would give it to him because I think he's leading the league in goals in rookie, and he's just 4 goals in that playoff game last week. And so he's just a lethal scorer, and that's a tough thing to do, to be able to come right in this league and as a rookie to put up that many goals. So it's I'd love to be able to say 1A, 1B right there, but and sit on the fence. But if I had to say over the course here, I go Jake Withers, and then that's no shot at what Fennell has done as well. He's been a great player for us all year, and you don't see the stuff that doesn't come up on the stats as much, like the big picks and offensive loose balls, but he does those, and they're not the flashiest things, but they're so important for our offense, so he's been great this year too.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's ever been a team that has had the third best rookie on their team in a season be as good as Eric Fennell has been this year, and I don't think it happens often.
No, I think, well, Georgia a couple years ago had a pretty good Lyle, Randy, and Jesse King, but...
And Chad Tutton.
After that, and Chad Tutton, they had 4 first-rounders, so...
Yeah, that was a pretty good group, too. We could have a long debate about those two groups, but appreciate your time, and obviously you're looking forward this weekend to playing Georgia again, and I think that's a very exciting matchup. You look at the overtime game you guys had in Rochester a while ago. I mean, that's got to be pretty thrilling for you guys to think about playing them with a shot at a return trip to the championship.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I'm happy to be in the position that we're in, but we still got a lot of work to do, so we're ready to go play Georgia. I think that matchup's going to be really good. That, like you said, that overtime game, that was their full unit that they have now, and our full unit, so I guess I'm sure they like to think that the first half of the year wasn't their best because of some of the guys that they had out, but we're confident we take our best against their best. I think we get the win.
Well, appreciate the time. It's always great chatting with you, and good luck as you move forward in the playoffs.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks, Denver.
Joining me on Boxle Beat from the defending champion Georgia Swarm, Jordan Hall. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
So, it's... interesting looking at you guys this year. What an up and down kind of season for the Swarm, and a lot of it did turn around. I mean, there's, I don't know if you'd say there was a championship hangover, but clearly a lot of things changed when you and Chad Tutton and Joel White all came back. Everyone activated for the February 17th game. Joel White actually couldn't make it until March 2nd, but since that time, the Swarm are 8-2, win the last 6 games of the season, and obviously there's a lot of confidence in the club right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're starting to get back to that feeling of where we were last year. You know, obviously we started last year and just continued through the year just scoring and scoring and scoring. I think this year was a little bit of, you know, some bodies coming in and out of the lineup, but I think we're starting to hit our stride.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously missed the first half of the season. You had work commitments, I believe it was, and Randy Stotts had a few injury issues, and like you said, guys in and out, so it takes a bit. But, I mean, a record-setting scoring offense last year, the expectation has to be that you're not going to set the record every year, so obviously you guys had to be prepared for some kind of a change.
You know, we did definitely have some shifting bodies, and we don't get to practice a lot, so you get better through a year with having the same people, and through a training camp having the same people. So it makes a big difference when you're not starting with the same group that can practice together and get those extra touches in, and especially when somebody else comes in and it gets removed, it's always difficult. But I will say, our defense did a great job of stepping up. I think they had to, given where our offense was for a little bit of the year. But I think it's only made our defense better.
Yeah, and I mean, again, with Tutton and White coming back really helped the defense. It was very similar to last year. I thought that the defense got better as the season went on. And in the end, the numbers wound up being pretty similar. I mean, you guys gave up 215 goals this year. after a year ago giving up 213 goals. So that's pretty consistent on the defensive end.
Yeah, and I would definitely argue that you know, they've really tightened up since getting those other two guys on the back end.
How does that go? I mean, when you're out and those guys, you know, Tutton was out for an injury that took quite a while to heal, and Joel White had his work issues and things. The three of you all just kind of come back at the same time. Obviously, you each had your own issues, but it's a pretty big boost when you get three key players back within a short time frame.
Yeah, the one thing about our team is that you know, we never left the group chat, and we never really left you know, the feeling of being a part of the team. You know, between injury and work, we couldn't be there, but you know, we were itching to get back, and I think it made it easier to come back and to gel right away. I will say that, you know, I played on a bunch of different teams in the league, and this Georgia team is definitely a tight knit group.
Yeah, you're a bit of a suitcase. You've been with seven teams. I mean, six teams, really, obviously, with New York and Orlando. But, you know, seven different locations, two of them Rochester. The one interesting thing that I look at is the effect that you've had on teams after you leave, the effect they have when you come and the effect you have when you leave. When Rochester traded you to New England, I went and studied at the end, later in that year, I studied the impact that that had on Cody Jamison, because you weren't scoring a ton with Rochester, but the impact on Jamison seemed pretty profound, and his scoring actually dropped about a point and a half per game after you left, which, I mean, everyone always talks about you have this impact that doesn't actually show on the score sheet with yourself, but I thought that was a pretty good indication of the way that your play can affect guys around you.
That's a cool stat. I'll have to remind Cody of that, but, you know, I grew up, my dad, I grew up a big Canucks fan, and, you know, my dad was always like, well, you got to be a Trevor Linden fan. He does everything, as opposed to a Pavel Bure fan who, you know, he's highlight reel and he just goes score goals. So, you know, I kind of grew up around that, and that's more of, you know, whatever needs to be done, you know, I'll make sure, or at least I'll try to do as best I can to get it done. You know, I got West Coast hands, so anytime there's a guy like a Cody Jamison or a Casey Powell or whoever else, I realize I'm not going to be the guy with the hands in that equation. So, you know, just trying to do whatever you can to win.
Speaking of West Coast hands, that actually reminded me of the 2010 Man Cup. You were with the New Westminster Salmon Bell as you came to the Peterborough Lakers to play in the Man Cup final. And there was one game, Cliff Smith was given credit for, I think it was for a hat trick, and everyone was talking about it. And one of the goals was actually you and not him. Do you still remember things like that, or is it just me that nitpicks over mistakes on the score sheets?
Yeah, you know what I remember? I remember that we didn't win.
Right.
I remember that we lost three in a row. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you never remember, you know, if you had, maybe some people, you know, you never remember. And that's one thing that as you get older, you even realize that you never remember who scored five goals in that game on your team, or if you had three or two, or, you know, but you remember winning and you remember losing.
It might have actually been five that they credited Cliff Smith with. Maybe you are remembering that a little bit.
Yeah. I have no idea.
Yeah, but, I don't remember that either.
Winning or losing, that's the only thing I ever seem to remember.
Yeah. So you won a championship last year, and then among the challenges this season, with the three of you being away that we've talked about, another one is you guys had six bye weeks this season, the schedule changing, and I know they were trying to, you know, the league was trying to open up more Saturdays, have, you know, improved dates the teams were playing, and try to reduce the back-to-back travel weekends, but the six bye weeks isn't really ideal from your guys' perspective, is it?
No, that is a definite challenge, especially, like you said, you start to get into a rhythm a little bit, and then you see the guys in 2 weeks, and you start to get into a rhythm a little bit with two or three games, and then you see the guys in a few weeks, and you know, Eddie Como, does a good job. He calls it the No Excuse League, just because it's you got to deal with it. But it is what it is. Sometimes travel is terrible and a nightmare. But you know, we all signed up for it, and that's why I think it's so important that you love doing it, and you have a good group of guys. Like you know, I know the guys in Georgia love seeing each other every single week.
What did you do last week to, as a team, to try and negate the effects of the bye week? I know Saskatchewan actually flew the whole team into Saskatoon, and they practiced there and then watched the Calgary at Colorado game together after a team dinner. What did you guys do to try to be prepared for, as it turns out, Rochester?
Yeah, in no excuse league fashion, we had practice schedules Friday night in Toronto and Saturday morning at the track in Toronto, and the beautiful day in Toronto, and then we had those 100 kilometer hour winds that picked up right in the afternoon when everybody was supposed to fly in. So we really essentially had one practice on Saturday because so many guys weren't able to get to the rink on time. So we did get together, though. We had a good practice. You know, we talked, you know, finally, it seems like the only time you ever get a chance to talk about clears and last minute plays and all those types of things. So we went over that and prepared. It was nice to kind of think about who you're facing and who you'll be shooting on.
I remember talking to Sean Ferris down in Baltimore early in the season, and he was pointing that out. He was saying, Our power plays really struggle, but that is the kind of thing you really want to get together and work on in practice, where you've got everyone there and you can be physically moving guys around the floor and looking at things. And he said just, yeah, the way the schedule was and the way the makeup of the team is, and, you know, just being in Duluth, it's difficult to get all together and you weren't getting much chance to practice.
Yeah. And you know, our power play, I don't think it's any secret. You look at the stats, it's a struggle this year. And I think that's part of it. Having guys come in and out of the lineup, as well as guys get injured, as well as having some bye weeks. And we've had a bunch of travel weeks where we've had the Friday that we can't get into to practice because of delayed flights. You know, it was a bad winter on the East Coast. So, you know, I think it takes its toll a little bit, but none of that really matters anymore. I mean, we're at a point where we just need to beat Rochester this weekend, and who cares about the regular season? And go from there.
And with all of that, like you said, it's a whole new season now. Plus, you went through all that, managed to finish first, and win, not and, by winning your last six games of the season. So I would imagine confidence is pretty high.
We know we're playing a good team. And, you know, speaking of tough travel, the only time we beat Rochester this year was the weekend that you know, we didn't have some guys in the lineup. I was actually in the stands that night. I think it was our first home game, but I think they flew from Buffalo or something, and all their flights were delayed. And you know, they came in basically with no sleep and played a back to back against us. Mm-hmm. And you know, we just edged them out. So you know, the other two games we lost. So you know, we're playing a team that we know we got to face, and they're going to be really good. We just you know, we're just focused on Rochester because I don't think we're confident in any way or overconfident in any way that, you know, this isn't a really good team that we're playing.
Yeah, actually, that game you won was on December 30th. You won 14-11 way back last year, literally. And the game that you lost earlier in the season, 17-10 on February 11th at home, just before things really got kind of turned around the next week. And then, to me, one of the best games, I was in Rochester to watch you guys play the overtime game on March 10th, and I thought that was one of the best games I've seen this season, and a pretty exciting preview certainly got me fired up to watch this game this weekend. I'm sure you guys, like you said, you're not going to be overconfident. You have to have your confidence, but I think it should be a heck of a lacrosse game.
Yeah, I don't disagree. They're a very good young team with some veterans as well. So we're definitely not taking Rochester lightly.
Appreciate you taking the time for the call, and wish you the best of luck this weekend. And it's good to see. It's always great when guys like you and Joel and Chad can get back into the league and into the game. So I know we're all excited to catch y'all playing this weekend.
Awesome. All right. Thank you.
Joining me on Boxle Beat from the Saskatchewan Rush, Adrian Sorachetti. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So the week off is a bit of a mixed blessing, I believe, for teams in the National Lacrosse League. The season changing this year, schedules were really different and a lot of bye weeks and teams really adjusting. But I know that you guys were gathering for practice last week. How do you all feel getting ready to go this weekend?
Yeah, like you mentioned, it is a bit of a blessing, and it is a bit of a problem to certain things. But I think to our benefit, it helped us a little bit from, you know, recovering from the bumps and bruises of the season. But it was fortunate for our team to be able to gather together and have a practice to get everybody back on the same page. But to your point, the problems lie where you do miss an opportunity to play at a game speed, a game pace, and to carry the momentum on. But I think our coaches and our team, everybody did a great job throughout the practice and obviously watching the game, Calgary-Colorado game. It got the sparks kind of flying for this upcoming weekend, so it was good.
Where did you guys gather to watch the game? You practiced at Saskatel, right?
Yes. Yeah, we ended up practicing at the Saskatel, which was nice, and followed by team dinner, and following that was kind of a team, I guess, film session watching the Colorado Calgary game all together. So it got the juices going, and it was exciting to watch all together and strategize against, you know, a great team, Calgary.
And where were you for that? Where was the gathering?
The film was actually held at the hotel, so it was pretty convenient for everybody. We didn't have to go too far. So after the game was over, we all kind of, you know, went to bed and took the next flight out the next morning to Toronto.
So this week, what's the schedule? When do you get in? Do you have a practice the night before?
I will be flying in Friday morning. I know some guys will be flying in the Friday evening. So haven't got the itinerary yet, but I'm sure it'll be pretty cut and paste from the whole entire how the season's been going. I think we're going to have a practice. We're going to have some film and get everything kind of prepped and ready for, like I said, a great team, Calgary.
Calgary showed in their game this past weekend that there's no give up in them. I actually thought watching the game as Colorado got off to a pretty dominant start and Calgary's kind of chipping away, when it got to 7-3 at the half, I actually thought Calgary was in a pretty good position given how Colorado hadn't been able to really pull away much further. And you could see it playing out like that. And you never, if you have a team down, people wonder sometimes, you kind of back off. You can't afford to back off on a team in this league.
No, definitely, and especially with a strong team like Calgary. And I know Colorado was up, and I knew the thoughts in the room while watching was, you can't give up. And that's just, goes on the talent and caliber of the players, right? So I think we're prepared for that. And, you know, we can't take the foot off the gas. And, you know, you have to respect the talent on their team. So
obviously the two big guns for them are Dane Doby and Curtis Dixon. Showed it on the weekend. Doby with an incredible performance with the 6 goals and a few assists, and Dixon with 4 goals. You don't have to worry too much about Dane Doby personally. You'll leave that, I know, to Rubish and Midsky and the righties. But you have to keep your eye pretty closely on Curtis Dixon. What's the big challenge with defending him?
You know what? You can't take anything away from guys like Digby and Berg and the other guys on the left side. Mm-hmm. And also, too, their goaltending is pretty stellar. Mm-hmm. And I think from a personal standpoint, taking away time and space is crucial. They have a lot of good shooters that if they're allowed time and space, they can hit their spots. So dictating the pace is something that we've been preaching all year, because you've seen in that game, as soon as you start playing on your heels, it becomes a bit of an issue. So I think dictating the pace and closing that gap will be
two important pieces that we're going to have to make sure we're all on the same page on this weekend.
You guys have had a very consistent lineup over the last few years. Not a lot of changes. You bring in a Mike Messinger, obviously a great addition. You've had a few guys in and out. Nick Finley's played a few games. Matt McGrady plays the odd game. Tor Reinholdt. But for the most part, the defense has been very consistent. But you bring a new goaltender in Evan Kirk this year, and that's a big change for the entire defense. What's the process been like assimilating to the new goaltender and getting a sense of if there's anything different that he wants to do, or is it more him adjusting to the style of defense that you guys play?
Yeah, there's definitely been a bit of a shift in terms of a few players hopping in and out, but again, the systems stay the same, so it's just a matter of how fast those players can adjust to not only the pace, but the angles and the style of defense that we're playing. But I know Kirk, he's a talented player, and he's been in a lot of, game situations where, from a junior level to a pro level, he's seen it pretty much, seen it all. So it's just a matter of adjusting to his preferences. And I think that the adjustments have been pretty seamless with him. He's a great goaltender, and he's not afraid to speak out if there is a small detail just to kind of help his game out. But I think, we have a lot of trust in our goaltending, and we have a lot of trust in our players that don't necessarily see the field every game. So it's just a matter of, sticking to our principles and having fun while doing it.
It's interesting looking at your season personally. You had 15 points, which is a new career high, 7 goals and 8 assists, but 12 of those came in your first 6 games, and then you got another point in your 7th, and after that, since then, you've only scored 2 points, 2 assists for the rest of the season. Was there a conscious effort to focus on more in your own end of the floor, or is that just kind of the way things worked out?
Yeah, honestly, I never really had time to think about that.
Yeah.
But I think just from off the top of my head, there was a lot of anticipation for our season. And obviously coming off of a tough loss last year, there was a lot of, built up excitement. And one of the factors of our game was transition, right? And I think that speaks on every level in today's game, where transition players may not necessarily get a ton of credit, but I think a lot of coaches and teams praise, a couple goals out of the back end, pushing the ball up the floor. So I think in the second half of the season, it was more switching the gears to playing honest defense and letting our offensive guys do the work. So I think it was just a bit of a mental switch where I tried to do my job in the D end and push the ball up the floor. And if things don't necessarily transpire, just kick it to the offensive guys and let them do their jobs.
Calgary, obviously, transition for them, a pretty important role. You've got guys like Mitch Wild and Zach Currier and Tyson Bell. Several guys are going to push the pace. For you guys, obviously, when you're thinking about transition defense, it's a combination of forwards getting some pressure, getting back if they have to, but the big thing, getting off the floor, and you guys coming on the floor. How challenging is it when you're coming off the bench and trying to pick up a guy who's running in transition to be able to get into a good defensive position on him without, you're racing out to get there. It's so easy to just overrun and let them kind of change directions on you. What's the mindset as you head out after somebody?
Right. Yeah, no, I think it's a bit of a whirlwind when offensive guys have that in the back of their minds when they're playing an offensive shift and they're always worrying about, what if the ball does transition over? How well do I have to play that? Do I have to take a couple steps to the doors to get our D guy out? Or it's a bit of a challenge in that sense. But I think coming on the floor, it's very important to take a small breath and observe the floor, because you have to respect guys like Wild and Bell and Currier pushing the ball up the floor, because they're capable of putting it in the back of your net, right? But you also do have to consider, the offensive guys charging down the floor too. So I think it's just a matter of, offensive guys being being aware and you know, also understanding that the D guys have to get on the floor too. So it's just a matter of, you know, reading and reacting and getting off as fast as they can, because, you know, those goals can crush teams because they're odd man situations, and you just have to play the best opportunity possible. So we're going to try to take away that and, yeah, just respect the players.
And a coach will always tell you, I'm sure, make sure you're taking a look before you get on the floor. Don't get onto the turf and then start thinking about where you've got to be. You've got to be aware as you're about to step on who's already gone ahead of you and where things are developing.
Definitely, definitely. There's a bit of a strategy to that, having, you know, certain guys on the door first, and whether that's the faster guys or just having guys that are, you know, maybe a little bit more talented, taking away certain, I guess, passing lanes and just, yeah, that kind of stuff.
How much of that, like, I know I've seen some teams where it looks like the defenders just kind of go in and go to the end of the line of defenders and go through, but you're mentioning that you do have ideas of certain people are going to be on the door. How much do you sit there and sort out, and how much is it just the next five guys?
Honestly, it just comes with, I guess, repetitiveness. Just you become conditioned to having, depending on what way you guys are running out, usually lefties on the door, then righty, then lefty kind of thing. Yeah. But in most cases, you want the strong side D guy to be running out first. So if the ball is pushing up and a guy like Mitch Wild's running down the floor, who's I think he's a right-hander, you want to be having that righty on him to kind of take away that top side, the lefty taking away the top side, if you know what I mean.
Right. So you or Jeff Cornwall or one of the lefties on your team will go out.
Exactly. Someone who, I mean, we have trust in all of our players. I'm not taking anything away from guys that are going out first, the guys that are going out last. But in most cases, you want someone a little bit quicker, depending on how far you have to run, you know, depending on the quarter. And obviously stick, the way you shoot is imperative as well.
What is the mix right now? I'm just trying to think how many righties and lefties you've got in your D on a basic day.
So I think we have a pretty good comp. We have it's three lefties and then seven righties, I guess.
Yeah. You, Corbeil, and Cornwall?
Yeah. And then usually Dilksy, depending on what the matchups are, he would, you know, cover a right-hand shot. He'd come on the left-hand side with us.
Okay, interesting. Well, little things that we're going to all be watching for this weekend now to see how those play out. Certainly appreciate the time, Adrian, and best of luck this weekend.
Yeah, thanks for the call. I appreciate if you ever need, I'm always someone that you can trust on that on the show.
Thank you. Always enjoy it. And I'll think up some good questions to get into details next time, too.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Joining me on Box the Beat from the Western finalist Calgary Roughnecks, Dane Doby. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Steven. How are you?
Excellent. I'm all right. I just got back from the dentist, had a cleaning, so I'd almost rather face Kyle Rubish on the lacrosse floor than have to go through that, which, of course, you're going to be doing soon.
Yeah, that's right. That's very true.
So last weekend, you went into the game against Colorado, and the big thing in your favor, obviously, or one thing, is the history over the last decade between these teams. You guys have been so successful in the playoffs, but I can't imagine that really – it's hard to imagine that comes that much into play, because you've still got to face these guys on this day with this lineup.
Yeah, exactly, and I don't think, you know, everybody was saying that before the game, but you know what, it's a new year is a new year, and that's the way we looked at it, and there's a lot of new faces on the team, so we just went out there and stuck to the game plan. We got down early there, and, you know, stuck with it, and stuff started falling in the second force, and we just took advantage of it.
I thought as we got to halftime of that game, I was watching, and I actually felt, I mean, Colorado had a lot of chances, and it seemed like they did have kind of the control of the flow of play, I thought, in the first half. But I felt going into halftime, especially with that last goal that you scored, that you got personally 30 seconds before the half, that it felt to me like you guys were in a good position, that you were ready to come out and almost had them in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, you know, down by 4 or 5, we wanted to be try to win the last 5 minutes of that second quarter there, and you know, I just got a ball on the net late in the quarter, and luckily it went in. But we had no doubt; we were just going to stick with it and play it out, and you know, grind away. And I thought Dylan Ward was fantastic in the first half. I thought he made some spectacular saves in the first quarter, especially, and yeah. You know, and we just. Stuck to it, and ball started dropping for us, and Christian and our defense played fantastic in the second half there for us, and we got back in the game in the third quarter there, and it's a back and forth battle in the fourth.
It's interesting looking at your season, and obviously kind of took a while to get rolling. You start out with the terrible loss, 17-6, and then, you know, get things turned around some and start to find your way. But I thought to me, the time when your offense really kind of got things turned around, everyone talks about the game you won in Toronto, 16-8, and I wrote about it at some length in my column that a lot of those goals were like individual effort goals where guys were making great plays, which you need. You need players to make plays, but I thought it was actually the week after that that your offense started to click the way I think we'd all been expecting it to, with, you know, with just everything working together and maybe the goals being a little easier to come by.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple points throughout the year I thought that could have been turning points. And yeah. I thought one, to be honest with you, was the comeback, and we lost to Saskatchewan at home there.
Yeah.
I think that was a week before the Toronto week. And, you know, we got enough guys up front that could do the job. And I think we have 430 goal scorers this year or higher. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely a good thing for us. And, you know, the ball moves well, and anybody can get hot at any day. And, you know, we do have guys like Wes and Dix that can just go out on their own and get goals by themselves. So that's definitely a benefit to have those two, and they can just go get fantastic goals, and you just sit back and watch. So hopefully this weekend it doesn't come to that. We can work as a five-man unit and be able to get some good looks on Turkey here. So we're excited going into Saskatoon.
The other guy, obviously, on the left side, I mean, Riley Lowen came in last year, and I think has been a great plugger for you guys, a really underrated player. But Holden Cotone, of course, also with a bunch of goals this year, stepping into Jeff Shatler's role to an extent. And obviously that helps you and Curtis and Wes, and when those guys and Tyler Rigby are really stepping up and playing as well.
Yeah, 100%. I remember calling Holden after he's done with the Man Cup there, and I just told him, I said, looking forward to playing with you, and I'm excited to see you get high 30s. Yeah. And, you know, I think he's ended up with 35 goals this year, and most of them were late in the year. So I think he's clicking on all cylinders right now, and he's got one of the purest shots in the league. And he just, you know, he's a great shooter, and he's got a cannon. And I like to keep Riley Lowen on as an underrated player because he's fantastic to play with. There's nobody else. You know, he's just out there and he grinds away and he gets you open, and he does a lot of little things that people don't notice on the floor. And I wouldn't want to play with anybody else right now rather than Riley right now, because he's fantastic. Like I said, he just does all the little things right, and you know, I think he'll have a little bit of momentum hopefully going into this Saskatchewan game.
I look at Cotone, and it's interesting. You know, he did wind up with 36 goals this season after having 7 last year, but 48 in the summer and in the regular season with Peterborough, and then a terrific playoff run. And it's interesting. You talk to players and coaches, and everyone emphasizes to be a good passer, you have to be a good shooter, and vice versa, kind of. And he had 5 assists in the game last weekend. And to me, part of it was the way he's been scoring lately. People are really having to pay more attention to him as well.
Most definitely. You can't give him a 20-foot shot, especially in the past month. He's been hitting the shots, and he had a big one for us last game of the third quarter. So yeah. I think last time we played Saskatchewan, he had 4. So he was our leading point getter that game. And, you know, we rely a lot on him, and he's a second-year guy, but I think he's a guy that
likes the pressure. He wants it on his shoulders. And, you know, that's fantastic to have. He ain't afraid to shoot the ball. And he's a guy, he's definitely an asset to this team. He can go off for four or five any given night. And, you know, we're excited to see him. And we, you know, I have all the confidence in Holden, and he has all the confidence in himself. So I think we just stick with our game plan. And when the shots are there, you take them, and he will eventually hit them. And he's been hitting them as of late. So we'll try and get him looks early.
On the other side of the floor, obviously Dixon and Berger are going to get a lot of attention. Tyler Digby, I think you talk to him, you talk to anyone, they're going to say it was probably not a great year for him. He didn't seem as engaged. He didn't seem to be as comfortable in the flow of the offense. But I thought on Saturday that was his best game of the year. He just seemed so involved in the play. The nice little lever pass on the one play to set up, I think it was Curtis, for a goal. And he just seemed like he looked like the Tyler Digby that came into the league and, you know, had people excited about coming to Calgary.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think Tyler's a big game player. He cares so much. And, you know, sure, he had his struggles this year, but he's another guy that, you know, goes under the radar a lot. And you don't notice him, but he does a lot of little things right. He gets Western and Dix open a lot during the game. So, you know, you go out and get Tyler gets one or two for us. You know, he's setting up a couple and helping other guys get open. So he always looks for better, and he's a fantastic player. And he set up Dix for the winner, and I think he set him up twice in the fourth quarter there nicely. So he's just a smart lacrosse player, and I'll take him on the floor if that's any time.
Yeah. You mentioned the game against Saskatchewan that you came back and wound up losing 13-12 in overtime. Obviously a very competitive game. You lost a 10-6 game to them in February. Then last game of the season, you lose to them 11-10. So, you know, three losses, but obviously it shows. I mean, in 2 one-goal games, an overtime game, you can compete with these guys. What do you feel you have to do this weekend, and is there an advantage to having played last weekend while they had to sit and practice?
I don't know. You can look at all the advantages and disadvantages and all that kind of stuff. It's just who shows up to play that game, I believe. I know they prepare just as good or better than anybody in the league, so they got a great coaching staff. But the games that we did lose to them this year, I think they've all been fairly low scoring. Nothing's been in the high teens or mid teens even. I think it's very important that our offense. I think our offense let us down against them a lot. I think they got a fantastic defense, but we got to play offense as a committee and go out there and earn our goals and hopefully get to Kirky and get to their defense. So I think that's very important for our offense right now is our offense has to step up and play this weekend. We can't rely on our defense and Delves to hold them to eight or seven goals because that's just unrealistic. So we just got to stay disciplined, play a full 60, and stick with the game plan that Coach puts in. And I think we got a good crack at this.
Transition is obviously an important facet of any game. And for you guys, I mean, with Courier and Wild and Bell and others pushing the pace, obviously there's some great chances. I think you guys are one of the better bench transition teams as well. You're very dangerous coming off the bench when it's the lefty side. On the other side, it can be either Dixon or Berg. I think West lately is coming off a lot. But how much do you factor that into the game plan? I mean, you said the offense needs to do a bit more, but obviously getting two or three goals out of the back end can make a big difference.
Yeah, well, most definitely 100%. And that's the same thing. That can win or lose playoff games. I truly believe that is special teams and transition. You know, we got to out-transition them. I think that's the big one. They're a very good transition team. So our guys are keen to run, and we got some guys that can put the ball in the net back there, and then we got guys coming off the door that can put the ball in the net as well. So out-transition them is a big factor in the game. You know, I think you just break it down, transition 5-on-5 and then special teams, and, you know, hopefully win two out of three of those and hopefully come out on the right end of the game.
Yeah, they put pressure on you as forwards as well in the rush you in their transition game, having to make decisions about when to head to the bench and when you need to go back and play some transition defense. And that must be a challenge as well, knowing that you're generally better off letting the guys who are defensive players get out there, but there are times you've got to stay in and pressure and play some D.
Yeah, most definitely. And that's a part of the game nowadays that has changed since I first came into the league is how fast-paced it is out of the back end. guys, defenders in this league, but the Pullman net almost just as good as offensive guys. So they got fantastic transition guys, you know, with Corbeil, Saracetti, Thompson, all those guys. Messenger can always put the ball in the net. So we just like to, you know, if you have to go back, you have to go back. We have a specific spot that we're supposed to play and, you know, hold our ground. And I think everybody's capable of playing defense and on our team. So we just got to step up in the right time and hopefully not let them get any, to be honest with you. But there's parts in the game where, sure, they're going to get their fast breaks, but you just got to eliminate most of their transition and hopefully play a 5-on-5 game.
You've mentioned, you know, you can look at all the stats, all the different factors, but it's whoever shows up. Does playing on Sunday make any difference? It gives you an extra day of rest and preparation, but is there much preference for the day that you play?
Not necessarily, but Mother's Day is a tough one to play on.
Right.
You know, I got a wife with a newborn kid, so, you know, a little bit, I guess, more motivation, I guess, there. But, you know, I think they had a game scheduled for Thursday, so I believe a Sunday game would be better off for our club right now, so we can have a little bit of rest. But, you know, I don't think anything that, you know, you don't want to come back after the game and give your what ifs or what happened if this happened. So I don't think there's anything in the way right now. We just worry about what's in front of us, and we just go from there. And, you know, they didn't play last week, but I truly believe that doesn't mean anything. And we played last week, and I don't think that will mean anything when it comes to the game. We just got to go out there and whatever team shows up, and we got to match their intensity and play a full 60, because they're really good at playing an even keel full 60.
And I assume your wife and baby will be tuning in. I don't know how much the baby can pay attention right now, but I'm sure they'll be watching.
Yeah, they'll be watching from home.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time. And that was a heck of a game last week with the 6 goals. I mean, it was just very impressive. The one thing I was going to talk about, actually, I forgot, is the style of goals that you were scoring. You had some, you know, a couple of the real quick sticks, a couple of your patented kind of fighting through a bunch of traffic and getting it off. It seems like you're prepared to do whatever is necessary to get the ball in the net and be prepared for whatever kind of shots are going to come your way.
Yeah, 100%. And the ones that were quick sticks were all right-handed players that got me open, to be honest with you. They got over top and got good looks at the net and were able to kick it backside. So it was definitely just throw the ball in the empty net kind of deal. So I got two like that. But, you know, when it comes down to this, it's whatever it takes to get the ball in the net. And try not to do too much. Just do what you can. And, you know, I'm here to score goals, and that's what I'm supposed to do, to be honest with you. And, you know, I'm getting up there in age, so this doesn't come around very often to get a good crack at it. So we think we have the team, and we think we got a great group of guys, and everybody's very confident. And like I said, we're excited to get to Saskatoon and get her going here.
I think everyone's excited to watch both the games this weekend, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show, and wish you the best of luck as you move forward.
Thanks, Sam.
There you have it, lacrosse friends, the first playoff edition of Boxel Beat for 2018, and I am very excited about these games this weekend. Saturday, Rochester at Georgia. Sunday, Calgary at Saskatchewan. Should both be terrific contests. Thank you so much, lacrosse friends, for joining in. I'm Stephen Stamp, your host for Boxel Beat and an editor at ilindoor.com. We've got lots of stuff coming up on IL Indoor. The season awards are coming up in the next little while. The playoff coverage, obviously, my musings are there every week. So go and check it all out on ilindoor.com. Make sure you come back every week for Boxla Beat on NLL Radio. Also, you can get it on iTunes through Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. And my thanks to my four guests, Brad Gillies, Jordan Hall, Adrian Sorchetti, and Dane Dobie. And, of course, to you, lacrosse friends, for being here. You're the reason we do the show. You're the reason it all happens. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next time.